This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. This is a repeat episode. Please be advised, references to date and time may not be applicable at this time. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are joined by Sam Bennett. She's the author of Start Right Where You Are and Get It Done. She created the Organized Artist Company to help creative people get unstuck and achieve their goals. She's a writer, actor, teacher, and creativity productivity specialist who has counseled thousands of artists and entrepreneurs on their way to success. Her website is startrightwhereyouare.com, and she's here today to talk about her latest book, Start Right Where You Are. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thank you so much, Marie. Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being with us today. So as you know, we like to start the show with a bit of an intentional prayer or meditation, and you have some amazing exercises in your book, Start Right Where You Are. So if you're interested, would you lead us through one of your favorites?
Sure, I'd love to. It starts with, I love to start with this breathing technique that I know. It's super simple. And I'll count us through it. So we just inhale for 4, hold for 7, exhale for 8. And, you know, maybe let's just do that 3 times. Let's just breathe. How about that?
All right.
All right. So if you're somewhere where you can put your feet on the floor, that's great. If you can drop your shoulders down and back a little bit. See if you can make a little space in the back of your neck. Open up the back of your neck a little. And soften your hands and soften your jaw and soften your gaze and soften your judgment. Mm-hmm. And let your belly go really poochy soft. And let's inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Inhale, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Hmm.
That's how I feel too every time. I'm like, And that's it. Like, how easy is that?
Beautiful. I'm curious, when you started doing the breathing practice, how did you learn it?
You know what? I have no idea. I mean, it must be 25 or 30 years ago I started doing it. And I don't know. I honestly don't know where I learned it from. And when I was writing the book, because I wanted to put it in the book, I thought, oh, I'll do some research and, you know, figure out what tradition this is from or where I could have picked it up. And it turns out, actually, it shows up in a lot of different traditions. So I honestly don't know. But I'll tell you what. I do it all the time. I do it. Sometimes I just do 1 breath. Sometimes I do 3. Sometimes I do 10. There have been some long nights where I've done nothing. You know, just done it for hours and hours. But it's amazing. There's something about it. I think it's the counting. I think it's just enough counting to confuse me. So that, like, I can't stress out and count at the same time.
And the breathing might have something to do with it, too.
It might have something to do with it. I hear that there's a parasympathetic response involved with breathing that's beneficial for a person. Yes, I've heard that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. I'm sure listeners will... I'm finding it. I've heard of it before, but it's always a good reminder to breathe and to take a moment to pause because we forget.
Yeah. And especially when the screws start to get tightened, you know, when you're in the parking lot of the Trader Joe's or, you know, having a difficult conversation with someone. And I hear from my friends with insomnia that it's great for insomnia.
We're here today to talk about your book, Start Right Where You Are. And your website is startrightwhereyouare.com. So 20 years ago, you were an actor and you were horribly depressed and sad. Can you tell us a little bit about what was going on for you?
I'd love to. Yes, I was pretty miserable. I grew up, like I said, I grew up as an actor. I was one of those kids who always did plays. I went to theater camp. I became a professional actor as an adult and had, you know, my career went okay. You know, it went well enough that you didn't want to give up on it, but not so well as to actually be able to support a person. And I was mostly, I was just broke and exhausted all the time. But also, I felt like I was doing everything right. I mean, I was following my bliss. I was doing good work. I'd get called back and called back and called back. And, you know, everyone liked what I was doing. I got a lot of praise. And yet, somehow, it still wasn't really working. And that was really frustrating and disappointing to me. Of like, how is it that I'm doing everything right and it's still not working? And I realized a couple of things. But one shift I made was I realized I had to stop waiting to be happy in the future. I was living a very future-focused existence. I was, you know, I kept thinking, well, if I get this show, well, if I get this gig, well, if I make this amount of money, well, if I hit this goal weight, you know, and sometimes I would get the show and sometimes I wouldn't, or I'd make the money or lose the weight or gain the weight or whatever or not. But I realized it wasn't helping. And I had to move my concentration into the present moment. I had to start feeling better right now, whatever right now was, like right in this exact second. What could I do right now to feel better? And it started to work.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm finding I've suffered from depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress and whole whack of things. And it was always that mentality of I have to fix my life, I have to fix the trauma, I have to fix, and the fixing, that's always down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you don't do things to make your circumstances better, but none of that external work really gets you very far if you're always waiting for something better to be happy.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm wondering, what you tell the story of how you were at home and your friends came over, you were miserable and crying, and they gave you a self-help book and you wanted to punch them because they were just so chipper. And I'm wondering if you could be there and speak to that younger, miserable version of yourself, what might you say to her?
I would say, quit being such a boneheaded snob about depression medication and go get on the Wellbutrin. Like, I think if I had taken that step sooner, that would have helped a lot. But mostly I would want to say, like, it's okay. Like, wait, hang on there. Wait till you see how this turns out. Like, you're going to live by the beach. You're going to have a six-figure business. You're going to write books. It's going to be great. Yeah, I think I'd want to tell her to hang in there. But I really did. I resisted the diagnosis of depression for a long time, and I resisted the idea of taking medication for it. And I really wish I hadn't. It was just pure reverse snobbery on my part. Because it just helps so much. It just, you know, it's not like it numbs you to your feelings or makes everything all rosy posy brilliant, but in my experience, it puts a basement on the house, you know. So mm-hmm. There's sort of a you know, when you start to go down, you don't go down as far. That's my experience.
Thank you for sharing that, and really appreciate that. So you have written now a whole book about recovering from procrastination, from overwhelm, from frustration. And in addition to the antidepressants, it sounds like getting over that spinning of your wheels and that procrastination and looking to the future had a lot to do with building the foundation that you have today.
Definitely. And it was a lot of little things, you know, it was a lot of little moment to moment mindset tricks and strategies and techniques. And that's really where the book came from. I mean, as you can see, it's a lot of really short chapters, like 1 and 2 pages, some of them, because I just wanted to throw up all these tools, you know, to throw together this toolkit that people could use, again, with very, like, very actionable, very right, do it right now things. Because when you are leading a series of, you know, when you are, I don't know, happy might be an overrated word, but, you know, when you are contented, when you are joyful, when you are happy in the present moment, you also, that leads, you get to be happy in the future. Like, you're happy as it's unfolding. You're happy along the journey, and you're, and you just get to be more awake for your life.
So you have an interesting version of how you describe God or that universal energy. I'm wondering if you could take a moment to share that with us.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that was another kind of big step with this book, is me coming more out of the closet as a God girl. I mean, it was always there as a foundation of my work, but I'd never been as explicit about it as I am in this book. So what I like to imagine is, like, if you imagine the core of you, the center of you, like the heartwood of you, and maybe that's like a beam of light, and you can, maybe it has a color, and you can imagine running it up through the top of your head and connecting you with the sky, and maybe it runs all the way down into the earth and connects you with the earth. And maybe there's also other beams coming out from you, like the fronds on a dandelion, like a dandelion puff, mm-hmm. right? These sort of spokes coming out of you. And maybe those spokes, you know, maybe it's energy or just your relationship with the potentiality of all things, right? Mm-hmm. And so there you are with all your spokes coming out of you, all lit up. And if you imagine that everybody else also has a lit up center and lit up spokes, and every other living thing has a lit up center and lit up spokes, and even the rocks and minerals have light and spokes, you can start to see how these spokes intersect into one big net. And that's what I think of when I think of God. I think of that net and how we are an inextricable part of it. God is working through us as us. The net is working through us as us. And I find it very restful. Like, I feel like I can lean back into the net a little bit. Like, I can trust it to hold me up. Or maybe if I'm feeling a little down, or I need energy, or I have a goal or something, like, I could tug on it a little bit. Like, I could pull on it. Mm-hmm. And you can, I get that sense of, like, I can't overwhelm the net. Like, I can't shine too brightly. I can't blow out the net. It's so much bigger than I am. And yet I am an important part of it. I am an inextricable part of it. So you cannot be away from it. And it's how nothing ever goes away. You know, the energy may be transformed, but it is the Alpha and the Omega. It is the beginning and the end. All things are in and of the net and stay in it. And even more, just going back to this little changes thing, you can imagine if you're there and all these spokes are coming out of you, and they're your relationship to the potentiality of all things, and you shift just a little bit, you make just a little 1 degree shift, you can imagine that all those spokes kind of rotate or shift as well. And that's often how I think miracles happen. Like, we make a tiny change, and all of a sudden we're just in alignment with something that we weren't connected to before, or we're a little away from something that maybe was hitting us right in the chest before. And that's when you get that feeling of, like, wow, I took a few little tiny steps towards something, and it's like the universe just came rushing at me, like, ding, like, here you go. And other times I think we work really hard and nothing happens, and it's because we haven't really moved.
I've got to share the image that came to my mind. I don't know if you ever watched America's Next Top Model with Tyra Banks.
I loved America's Next Top Model.
But that, when you said that small shift, the image that came into my mind was Tyra Banks sharing with her models the whole thing about smizing. And she would go from this, she'd be in the same position, and all she'd just do this tiny little tweak, and everything changed. The energy, everything.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And I love it that you have made me confess in public my deep and abiding love for America's Next Top Model. And I'll tell you what it is, because that show is so trashy sometimes. But I love shows about women and girls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so often what that show is. It's about women and girls. It also makes me so happy that I was, that I'm not that young anymore. but yes, that's exactly right. That little 1 degree shift of, and it's one of the things I talk about in the book too. Like, how can you be just 1% more you in this moment? And sometimes that means just making eye contact and smiling at somebody, just having a real authentic connected moment with someone. How can you dial it up just a little bit?
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you hear with me?
This is a repeat episode. Please be advised, references to date and time may not be applicable at this time. Enjoy the show. What I love about your book, every little chapter has an exercise, an action step that you can take, whether it's a writing exercise or something to consider or something to do. And I find that so helpful because a lot of, as I'm sure you're aware, a lot of self-help books have all of this philosophy and theory, but there aren't a lot of actionable steps to take that are easy enough to do. And one of the things I love is you recommend doing the smallest and simple, affordable steps that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you so much for saying that. And I'm so glad that you're enjoying it. And it was very important to me that everything be practical and actionable, because I've absolutely had that experience of listening to teachers that I love and people who really deeply inspire me, and I'm listening and I'm inspired, and then they finish and I'm like, yeah, but now what? You know, like, what do I do tomorrow morning? What do I do with all these notes? And also that same feeling of frustration that I was having, crying on my couch. That feeling of like, how is it that I understand all this self-help stuff? Like, I bought all the books, I've gone to the workshops, I listened to the podcasts, I got it, I understand it, and yet I am not seeing the results in my life. You know, I believe that there's a benevolent universe, and yet I'm still having a screaming match with my sister. I believe that there's money in abundance and plenty of clients, and yet I'm still seeing the lack in my bank account or in my business. So I really wanted to help bridge the gap between the theory and the practice. That was really important to me.
One of the things that I really wanted to talk with you about was you talk about overwhelm and how, I mean, these days, who isn't overwhelmed? It's just an overwhelming, chaotic life that we live in. But you break it down into different reasons people are overwhelmed. And this one, I've kind of been sort of aware of it, but I didn't really know what to do with it. And that was the idea of having so many ideas and so many directions that we could possibly go in, which is an amazing thing to have, but then not knowing what direction to take, because you can't do everything at once.
Right. And I see this especially because, you know, my real business is the Organized Artist Company, and my real business, what I do in my free time, the Organized Artist Company. So I work with creatives, helping them get unstuck. And that's the thing with working with, I mean, I believe that everybody is a creative genius, but people who self-define as creatives or who have a career, in which they're using their creativity a lot, is they have a ton of ideas. They have a million ideas, and they have them full blown, you know, like they're they get the idea that it's like it's full and complete and three-dimensional, and there's sequels and theme parks and an international grassroots movement and t-shirts and, you know, like they can see the whole thing, and then they're immediately paralyzed, like, how do I even start on something that big? And then they've got 10 of those ideas. So then they really, so they're spoiled by choice. There's too many options, too many things to do. And then there's a little bit of sparkly thing syndrome in there too, of mm-hmm. like, ooh, this new idea is better. Oh, let's do this one. Ooh, this one's new. Let's do that one. Ooh, this one's new. Let's do that one. So, part of it is just naming that, like, cause the thing with overwhelm, first of all, overwhelm, I agree with you. It's a word I am hearing all the time, and like way more than I ever heard it 4 or 5 years ago. But now just everyone is telling me I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed. So first of all, overwhelm is a choice. Overwhelm is a choice. It's a choice you are making for you, about you, and about how you are handling the information that's coming at you. So put yourself back in the driver's seat. And I think we get that feeling of overwhelm when we cannot tell what's important. You know, and sort of everything's coming at us with the same level of intensity. That's when we feel overwhelmed, right? Because we can't sift. We can't discern what's important. So again, this is where you've got to take the reins. You've got to be back in the driver's seat and you decide what's important. So being able to have some method of both capturing all your great ideas, but then some method of discernment. So you can go, okay, what's really the priority here? You know, what's going to have the biggest impact? What's going to bring in the most amount of money? What's easiest? What's most fun? What's whatever it is, you know, your criteria can be whatever you want it to be. What can I do between the hours of, you know, 10 and 11:30 while the baby's asleep? You know, I don't know. But to create that criteria for yourself and then stick with it so that you can actually see some progress.
Hmm. And I loved your idea for how to deal with that, of keeping, just writing it all down.
Absolutely. You've got to have some kind of idea catcher. You know, I like index cards. I find them cheap and cheerful, and whole pieces of paper intimidate me. But an index card, I feel like I can handle. but, you know, do what works for you. Some people like to leave themselves voice memos. Some people like to send themselves an email or use the Notes app, or maybe they use Evernote or some other kind of online thing. But you've – because this is another little trick of the brain. I just had this happen with a client the other day, one of my private clients. She's like – she calls me. She's like, I have a million ideas. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I've got a million ideas. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me your million ideas. Well, it turned out she had like 6 ideas, 2 of which she wasn't actually that interested in. Like they were sort of should ideas. Like, I feel like I should, you know, update my LinkedIn profile. I'm like, oh, please. Nobody cares. Save it for some other time. you know, let's focus on something that's going to bring in some money instead. But, you know, when it's rattling around your head, it feels like a million. Because you're like, oh, idea number 1. Ooh, idea number 4. Oh, no, maybe 5. Oh, no, I should start with 2 and then do 3. No, wait, 6 is really better. No, 2. No, 6. Like, that feels like a million. But if you get it on paper, then you can look at it and go, oh, look, it's actually only 6, and these 2 I don't even care about. So it's only 4, and I can manage 4. Like, I'm not overwhelmed by 4. I can do 4.
And, Sam, the thing that I really resonated with was the keeping it all together so that you can look back and notice things that are recurring themes, or maybe ways you could piece different ideas together into one project. I was looking through, I've been decluttering my house the last couple of weeks, and I was looking through some old journals, and it's amazing how I'm dealing with a lot of the same questions I was dealing with 3 years ago, and the quality of the problem might be a little bit better, but they're the same kind of, the questions I'm asking are the same.
I found a diary from when I was 9.
Wow.
And I'm asking the same questions.
Oh my gosh, really?
I mean, yeah, we are here, you know, we are on some kind of PhD path, right? The stuff that interests you, the stuff that's sticky for you, the stuff that engages you, that's always, that's you, you know, it's part of who you are. And it's partly why I get a little fractious when people criticize self-help, you know, people who love self-help and personal improvement as like, what a waste, or, oh, another workshop. Oh, are you reading another self-help book? Like you're at some point going to master your personal development. Like at some point you're just going to go like, oh yeah, no, I got it now. I got that dialed. Like, no, it's an ongoing quest. And as you say, we get more sophisticated in our the quality of our problems and the way we approach them. We can often move through things more quickly, but the actual nut of the thing is always going to be the same.
So I feel like I should be frustrated about that.
No, it's your golden opportunity. It's your golden opportunity. This is the thing that, and it's often the thing that you are here to help teach the rest of us about. Because, like I said, you've been working on this your whole life. You've been, you know, you came with a certain set of gifts and qualities and temperament. Like, you arrived, you know, we didn't ask to be this way. You didn't ask to be this smart or this funny or this sensitive or this dreamy or this cynical or whatever it is you are, you know, the way your personality stacks up. But you are. These were your gifts. You come this way. You have this stuff that you're here to work out, to work on, and you're getting a PhD in it, you know, and which is why we all have this feeling of like our friend, like my friend calls me and asks me for advice on this thing. And I talk to them like I know, and I hang up the phone and I think, I don't know why they think I know anything, because I don't. Right. But it's just like somebody getting a PhD, you know, they'll tell you, if you talk to somebody who's getting a PhD in 20th century French literature, you'll say, oh my gosh, you must just know everything about 20th century French literature. And they will say, oh no, 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 no. I'm only just beginning. I've only scratched the surface. I don't, and you're sitting there going, well, maybe, but you know way more than I know. Right. So that's the gift. That's the gift of it, to look and see, like, where are these recurring issues, you know, around whatever it's around jealousy, around belonging, around, you know, self-expression, around caring, whatever it is for you. And how can we share that even more with the world? Because that's partly why you're here.
There's I can't remember what chapter it's in, but you mentioned something that really resonated with me. I think it was something to do with limiting beliefs or the old tapes that we play in our head. And there was the idea that, oh, well, it's already been done before. And I feel like that holds so many of us back, because so many of us could be writers, artists, teachers, builders, whatever. But it feels like, well, there's already someone who is selling that to 10 million people a year. How am I even going to break into that industry when everyone and their dog is already a coach or an actor?
Right. Okay. So three things about this. One, yes, it's all been said before, but not by you. It's all been done before, but not by you. So we need to hear it from you. We need to hear it from you. Second of all, it feels to us like everybody and their brother is doing it, because this is where our awareness is, right? Somebody else goes like, you're a coach. What is that? Like, for baseball? What do you mean? You know, like there are a ton of people who have no awareness that there are coaches. You know, there's people who have no awareness that there's a personal development industry. There's people who have no awareness that there's, you know, podcasts. Like, it's not what they're focused on. So they've never even heard of it. So we're aware of it because we're interested in it. And this is where I also get a little heartbroken when people say, like, oh, I'm not ready. You know, I would do that, but I'm not ready. Like, no. If you're aware of the opportunity, that's your engraved invitation. If you weren't ready, you wouldn't even know about it. You wouldn't even be listening to this. It would never have crossed your mind. So understand that awareness is your invitation and your opportunity. And the fact that somebody's selling it to 10 million people already is a great sign. They've proved your market for you. you don't want to be the first one in a market. You want to be doing something that you know other people are already interested in, that you know it's possible to sell, that you know that people have been successful in this before, and you can look to them and steal from them. like take their best ideas and make them your own. That is how we learn and grow. Elvis Costello, I was listening to an interview with Elvis Costello one time, who's one of my favorites. And his advice to young songwriters was find somebody, you know, a songwriter you admire and copy them. Literally copy them. Like actually try to write their music their way. Which I thought was brilliant advice because, of course, you can't. Right? I can't write Elvis Costello's music. Only Elvis Costello can write Elvis Costello's music. However, even in trying to deliberately imitate him, though, I can learn a lot about how he does what he does. And I can see then evidence of how I do it differently and what I bring to the party that he doesn't bring.
Thank you, Sam. We're speaking with Sam Bennett. She's the author of Start Right Where You Are, How Little Changes Can Make a Big Difference for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. And her website, startrightwhereyouare.com, has meditations and worksheets and lots of information. I got to go check it out still. I think that's the key when you said, the difference between I'm not ready and I'm choosing not to spend money on that right now. It's that 1 degree difference that you talked about.
Exactly. Because one is passive. One is a little, you know, a little victim-y kind of, you know, there's something. And also, you know, the other problem with I'm not ready, and let me just point this out, both to you personally as a creator and to everyone else, you are a terrible judge of your own work. You are a terrible judge of your own work, and you're a terrible judge of your own readiness, right? You can't, you know, it's very difficult. It's in the same way you can't really hear your own voice. You know, you are your own resonator. That's not your job to judge your work or to judge your level of readiness. So get out of that business, you know, and trust other people. Have a little faith. And the beautiful thing about faith is that it is not something that you have to generate. It's not something you have to find or create or like rev up like a motorcycle, like rah, 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 I gotta get some faith, rah, 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 the faith, rah, 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 like get the faith going, right? It's not that. Faith is already exists. You just have to accept faith. We already have faith in you. Your clients and potential clients already have faith in you. Your fans already have faith in you. God already has faith in you. I already have faith in you. So you just need to accept my faith in you that you can do it and see how far you get.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
We always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers.
This is a repeat episode. Please be advised, references to date and time may not be applicable at this time. Enjoy the show. When you were talking about how we're not a good judge of our readiness and we're not a good judge of of the work that we do, my boyfriend is a stand-up comedian. And that's exactly the problem he has. Like, he'll be doing a show and the crowd loves him and he'll be better than the headliner and everything. And 99% of the time, he still won't be satisfied with it. And he'll be like, I don't know what it was that they liked about that because I thought it wasn't that good.
Right. So there's a couple of layers going on there. There's just a base level creative dissatisfaction, which is just good. I mean, that's how all creative people create. It's not like, yeah, I think it could be better though. Yeah, I think it could be a little, yeah, okay. I think I want to keep going. I think I want, you know, it's only a problem when you stop letting things out of the house. And one of the things I talked about a lot in my first book is called Get It Done, From Procrastination to Creative Genius in 15 Minutes a Day. And one of the things I talked about in that book is the idea of getting a C. Just get a C. Quit trying to get an A+ in everything. Just get a C. C is the grade that you get for showing up and doing the work. Show up, do the work. Show up, do the work. Not doing the work better than anybody else. Not doing the special extra credit work. Just show up and do the work. And the reason it works, because I can hear all the perfectionists like breaking into hives. Hang on. Because I'm that way too. But here's the thing. First of all, your version of a C is pretty much everybody else's version of an A. You might have noticed that already.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, this is how we learn and grow, right? You get it out. If it really does need to be made better, then you'll make it better. That's how you roll. So some of it's just baseline creative dissatisfaction. And as long as he's actually out there and doing it and getting feedback and understanding that what his discernment, I mean, he's got a view of the audience and a view of his material and a view of the stage that's coming from behind his own eyes. He's the only one with that view. The rest of us are all out here having this external experience of him or of you or of me, right? We don't know what it's like to observe us at work. We don't know what it's like to see us across a room and go, hey, who's that? You know, we've never flirted with us. You know, we've never been on the receiving end of our own energy. So we don't know. And as far as performance goes, and speaking as a, you know, as a comedian and a performer myself, and also actually in marketing, the rule I made for myself was I only take notes from paying customers and people who are better at what I do than I am. So when I get emails from looky loos, you know, people on my list who love me and they like everything and share, but they never actually buy anything, I don't take advice from them. I love them, but I don't take advice from them. And I don't take advice from people who aren't better marketers than I am or who aren't better performers than I am. Play tennis with better tennis players. That's the rule.
Hmm.
Everything else you have my permission to ignore. Especially your family. They love you, but they don't know what you do. So just don't even discuss it with them.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Because I think that goes along with the discernment about choosing what project to work on. You can't listen to everybody.
No, you'll go nuts and you can't do everything. And you'll be amazed, honestly, you know, how much you can do. I love combining ideas. It's something I do a lot with my private clients is they'll say like, I don't know. I mean, I really want to, you know, work on my model train collection, but I also really want to have a podcast. Like, couldn't you have a podcast about model trains? Oh my God. You know, like, light on. It's amazing how often, you know, what feels to us like, oh no, those are two totally different things. Like, well, no, because they're both coming from you. So, you know, I think you could combine those things and put them under one umbrella. And I'll tell you, like, and I know I say this like it's super easy peasy, but I'll tell you, even writing this book itself, Start Right Where You Are, I was not confident in this book as it was happening. Like, I sold the book they bought the book in the middle of December, and they said, can we have the manuscript by the end of January? And I said, no, but you can have it by the end of February. So I wrote this book in like 9 weeks. And while I was still running a business, oh, and the holidays, oh, and my father's 75th birthday in South Carolina, oh, and, you know, everything else in life that's happening.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so I'm writing, and I'm writing, and I'm writing, and I'm writing, and I'm like, this is not, as I'm writing, I'm thinking, this is not working. Like, I don't think this material is working. I don't think the tone is right. I'm not really sure I'm the right person to write this book. Like, every mental block, every bit of self-doubt, everything I've ever had came just roaring up out of the basement. And all I could, luckily, you know, I have this job. Luckily, I have the Organized Artist Company. Luckily, I spend all day talking to people about their creative projects. So I knew enough to say, okay, thanks, crazy voices. Like, I'm just going to, it's my job just to get the thing on paper. Like, this is why God made editors. If I send it in and it's terrible, they will write me back and say, Sam, this is terrible. Please make it better. And then we'll do that, you know? But it can't be made better until it exists to begin with.
I really appreciate that you shared that doubt, the fact that you had doubts as well, because I think that a lot of us, especially if we're just starting out or we've had a lot of false starts, we feel like, well, we're afraid, and those people who are so successful, they're not afraid.
I hear this all the time. Like, this idea, I think we tell this ourselves, this story all the time. We see somebody who does something that we want to do, and we automatically assume it must have been easier for them. And I am here to tell you, it is not easier for anyone. It is not easier for anyone. And the thing that you think makes it easier for that person, like, oh, well, of course it's easy for them. You know, they've got an advanced degree. Or, oh, it's easier for them. She's so beautiful. Who, you know, he comes from such a successful family. Of course. I'm here to tell you, that person's advanced degree has them hogtied with, you know, concerns about legitimacy. And the person who's so beautiful is racked with insecurity that anybody even sees who she is, really. And the guy from the successful family is, worried to death that everybody thinks that he just got everything handed to him on a platter, right? So the thing that you think makes it easier for somebody else, I guarantee, is the thing that makes it harder for them. And it's just as hard for everybody. Nobody gets a free pass on this one.
I mean, I imagine you came to this discovery because you work with so many people and you see so many talented people. And they're all dealing with the same thing.
And Emmy Award winners and Academy Award winners and super duper famous people. I'm telling you, everybody has this feeling. Everybody feels like a fraud. Everybody feels like, you know, I can't believe they're taking me seriously. This is so weird. Everybody feels like, I can't believe I've gotten this opportunity when I know 15 people who are better than I am. You know, like, but all there is just keep your head down and do the work. You know, keep your eyes on your own paper. You know, quit checking everybody else's work. That's not your job. It's not your job to judge your own work. It's not even really your job to judge anybody else's either. It's your job to do your work. And anything that gets in the way of you doing your work, including that voice that says, it's too hard, I can't do it, I'm too scared, I'm too shy, my father said I couldn't, you know, that's your work. That's your invitation to grow. That is your invitation to become a stronger person, a better communicator, a better boss, a better citizen, a better mom, a better whatever. Like, the things that look like walls are bridges. And you have to go across. It's your destiny to go across.
Thank you, Sam. And I'm wondering, you talk about the very successful people still being like, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this. I can't believe people are taking me seriously. But what about the people who are working and working and working and constantly see people who may legitimately not have as good a product or not be as talented or intelligent or whatever, and yet those people are passing them by and getting ahead, and this person with all the talent and intelligence and drive is just still right where they've always been? What do you say to that person?
Well, again, first of all, I think it would be a very different world if we all made the best possible decisions all the time. Like, we only ate the best food. We only watched the best movies. We only, you know, like, participated in the most talent. It's not really about, especially when you're talking about art and creativity, it's not really about best, right? I mean, when I think about my favorite books, the one I reread over and over again, or my favorite shows, or my favorite movies, like America's Next Top Model, nobody in the world is going to say, oh, yeah, that's one of the best shows on television. Right? It's not. In fact, it's probably in the lower third. Right? And yet, there is something compelling to you and I, anyway, about that show. There's something that draws us to it. There's something that makes us choose that over the, you know, very well done, Pride and Prejudice. You know, the very well done version of Pride and Prejudice that we know would be sort of more culturally edifying for us to watch. So give everybody a flippin' break for a second. You know, you don't always pick best ever either. And again, to look to those people who are super successful doing what you're doing, and what is it about them? How are they, what are they leaning into that you're not leaning into? What are they not resisting that you're resisting? Or what are they refusing to do that you do all the time? Like, where in this, where can they be your teacher and your guide? Because that jealousy, that feeling of like, of jealousy, it's not a pretty feeling, and we don't like to talk about it. We don't like to admit to it because it's not polite, but it's a very valuable feeling because it's the green light from your soul. It's your soul saying, not only do I want that, but I think I can do it. We're not jealous of the things we don't think we can do. You know, you tell me you just swam the English Channel, I'm like, yay you. I am not jealous. Like, because I don't want to swim the English Channel and I don't think I could. Right? But you tell me you're going on an artist retreat for 6 weeks in Provence, now I'm jealous. Because I think I would like to do that and I think I can. So take that jealousy as a sign of the strength of your desire and the strength of your will. And start pushing for yourself, because it's there is a way, there is room for everybody. Nobody ever turned around and said, that's it, enough talented people, thank you, the rest of you go away, no more books, we're done. Like, it never happened, right? No, that's enough funny people, thank you funny people, go away. Like, no, there's always room for more. There's always room for more. And it may be helpful to look historically, because sometimes, you know, when people are contemporaries, it can feel a little prickly. And again, you got to remember, my background's in theater. I worked at the Second City for almost 10 years in almost every job there was, including actor, which meant, you know, I was friends with Steve Carell and Steve Colbert and Jim Belushi and Nia Bardalis and Ian Gomez and Amy Sedaris and Adam McKay and, you know, like all of these super famous people. John Favreau. I was John Favreau's boss.
Wow.
He's good, right? He directed like Iron Man. And it was really, you know, and there were many times when it was really challenging to watch these people who were my peers become super duper crazy famous. And here I was crying on my couch in Sherman Oaks, right? And it's again, this was my invitation, right? To go, okay, first of all, me being mad about this, it's like I'm mad that I made it onto the Olympic team but didn't make it to the podium or something. Like, really acknowledge how well you're doing. It's easy to not notice how well you're doing. So notice how well you're doing. Notice what they're doing that maybe you're not doing. And also, again, look historically. What have people done in the past? What did people do 100 years ago to succeed at what you want to do? Like, what lessons can I take from those people? Because again, like I said, it can be a little challenging to look to your peers, because you're like, dude, we were just back, you know, Rachel Dratch and I were backstage together like 2 minutes, like it was a minute ago, I swear. And bless them, they didn't get your success, they got theirs. They got their success. You go look for yours.
Oh, Thank you so much, Sam. We're speaking with Sam Bennett. She's the author of Start Right Where You Are, How Little Changes Can Make a Big Difference for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. You can find her website at startrightwhereyouare.com, and there's lots of treats and meditations and lots going on there. I'm wondering, Sam, we all need to find our own success, but why? Why is that so important right now?
The only thing that ever changed the world is a new story. Stories are what moves the world, and we are the storytellers. This is our time. If there are things that you want to see changed in the world, your voice is the one to change it. And whether you express that through skateboarding or music or teaching or, you know, being the world's greatest plumber, whatever, you know, your work can be a force for good in the world. And we need it to be.
Awesome. So, Sam, before we wrap up, I'm wondering if there's anything that needs to still be covered, or what would you like to leave us with today?
Well, I will say one of the suggestions in the book, and as you say, there's 66 of them, so it's a little like picking your favorite child, but this kind of is my favorite child. it's the make some 5-minute art about it. And this is a little exercise, a little fun getaway thing that I recommend whenever you're stuck. So you're stuck in that jealousy, or you're stuck in that anger, or you're stuck in that that heartbreak, or something that happened in your past, you know, some story that's got you, that's holding you captive. Make some 5-minute art about it. And maybe that means you draw a picture. Like, what does that heartbreak look like? What color is it? What shape is it? You know, or maybe you make up a little story, or write a fairy tale, or sing a little song, or do a dance, or get out your Sculpey play, whatever blows your skirt up. And here's what happens. Two things happen. One, feelings just want to be felt. So once that feeling knows it's been felt, like, it can graduate, get promoted, and get a better job, as opposed to trying to keep that feeling locked up, because we all know how well that works. So get the feeling out onto a piece of paper or into the world in some form. And then once it's out of your head, you can start to interact with it a little bit differently. Right? You can start to interact with it a little bit differently, and you can start to have a different perspective on it. And this is another one of these little 1-degree shifts. I was doing an interview with a woman who, like you, she read the book, and she came across the, you know, make some 5-minute art about it, and thought, like, oh yeah, that's interesting. I should try that sometime. Right? Like we all do. I'll do that. But then, as it happened, the next day she had a terrible day at work, because she still got her day job. She has this terrible day at work. She comes home super upset and thinks, oh, I should make some 5-minute art about it. So she makes this drawing that's just, you know, stick figure. But it's her kneeling in the center of the page and everyone else throwing rocks at her.
Wow.
Because that's how it had felt at work. Like, people were just throwing projects and judgment and crappiness at her. And she was like, so just, again, just to see it was like, oh, wow, yes, that's how I feel. And then she took a different pen and drew like a circle around her, like an invisible shield. She said it was her invisible shield, and it was the love of God. She said she went into work the next day with a totally different attitude, because she knew she was protected by God's love.
Wow, talk about stories. That is a story.
Right? Can you imagine you show up at an audition like, no, I'm prepared. I'm just here protected by God's love. There's no competition. There's no race. There's no better or worse. God's got this. The net has this. It's just my job to show up, do my thing, spread a little love, go home.
Thank you so much for illustrating that so beautifully. I know that everyone listening now is going to be ready to make a 5-minute art project about the next upsetting thing that comes up. Does it have to be upsetting?
No, it can be the great stuff too. It can be the great stuff too. But you know, the great stuff doesn't trouble us so much. It's this, you know, it's the stuff that's holding you back that I really want you to process and move through. And again, you know, I had one client who we were working on financial stuff and she was getting upset. She made some 5-minute art and it was like this giant black bird that like filled up the whole page. And she was like, wow, I didn't even realize how angry I am about this situation. I was like, right, good, okay, so now go process your anger and we'll come back and deal with the money stuff later. But like, she hadn't even really allowed herself to acknowledge how strongly she was feeling about it. So sometimes our art can reveal ourselves to us a little bit better than maybe we can, than our logical brain can always, you know, figure out.
Wow, well, that could be a whole other interview just about processing those emotions that we're not aware of. But I know that we've gone over time now. So we are speaking with Sam Bennett. She's the author of Start Right Where You Are, How Little Changes Can Make a Big Difference for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. And if you're listening to this on the radio, we did go over time. So you can go to my YouTube channel or go to my website, mariebenard.com, and you can hear the extended episode because I'm sure that you missed out on some great stuff. Oh, thanks so much, Sam.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was beautiful.
Thanks.
I haven't checked out your website yet, actually, because I was still finishing up the book. But are you on Facebook and Twitter and all of that?
I am. Both me as the author and me as the person and me as the business. I think we're all in there. And Twitter and Instagram and yep.
And you do some group coaching as well, right?
I do. I offer classes. In fact, I've got a Start Right Where You Are class that I teach online. That's a lot of fun.
Cool. And I'm assuming that's all listed on your website as well.
It is. And the best way, really, the best thing for people to do or for you to do is to hop on to get whatever the freebie is. I think there's the Procrastination Domination Starter Kit. And then that puts you on my email list, which is mostly how I communicate with people is via email. So once you're on my list, then you'll know what's going down.
Cool. Well, I will get on that list because, I can feel the shift happening already, which, I mean, what a better endorsement can you get for your book, right?
Thank you so much. And please tell your boyfriend good luck. And
thank you so much for your time, Sam. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. StartRightWhereYouAre.com. Check out the site. Check out the book. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marie. Thanks, everybody.
And thank you for listening. It's been such a pleasure serving you. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
It's one small step for man.
So vote.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
Hey, did you know?
More than 4,500 Canadians are waiting for an organ transplant right now.
Right now. 4,500.
People are dying.
And you could save a life.
90% of Canadians say they're willing to donate their organs.
But only a few are registered.
So what are you waiting for?
Get registered.
It's easy and it's free.
Leave a legacy.
Be a hero.
Save a life.
Find out how to register today. Go to kidney.ca.
If you appreciate future bass, grime, footwork, dubstep, halftime, trap, sexy bassy dance music, then join us on Friday, May 13th at the Imperial with international talent Thelum and Aztec, plus locals Tal Mala, Michael Red, and Barley. Search The Deeps on Facebook for details.
Sexy dance music, sign me up! You're listening to 101.9 CITR. Hey, how are you? This is the Parts Unknown Show.
Sleeping on your floor. If you're ever in Coquitlam, come and